troops on Coruscant. He was indeed anxious to get there, though not for the reason Obi-Wan had stated. It wasn't the Jedi Temple that beckoned to the Padawan, but rather a rumor he had heard over the comm chatter that a certain senator, formerly the Queen of Naboo, was on her way to address the Senate. Padme Amidala. The name resonated in young Anakin's heart and soul. He hadn't seen her in a decade, not since he, along with Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, had helped her in her struggle against the Trade Federation on Naboo. He had only been 10 years old at that time, but from the moment he had first laid eyes on Padme, young Anakin had known that she was the woman he would marry. Never mind that Padme was several years older than him. Never mind that he was just a boy when he had known her, when she had known him. Never mind that Jedi were not allowed to marry. Anakin had simply known, without question, and the image of beautiful Padme Amidala had stayed with him, had been burned into his every dream and fantasy, every day since he had left Naboo with Obi-Wan a decade ago. He could still smell the freshness of her hair, could still see the sparkle of intelligence and passion in her wondrous brown eyes, could still hear the melody that was Padme's voice. Hardly registering the movement, Anakin let his hands return to the controls of the nav computer. Perhaps he could find a little used lane through the Coruscant traffic congestion to get them home faster. Klaxons blared and myriad alarms rent the air all about the area, screaming loudly, drowning out the cries from the astonished onlookers and the wails of the injured. Typho's companion pilot raced past him, and the captain scrambled to regain his footing and follow. Across the way, Dolphy was up and similarly running toward the fallen form of the senator. The female fighter pilot arrived first, dropping to one knee beside the fallen woman. She pulled the helmet from her head and quickly shook her brown tresses free. "Senator!" Typho yelled. It was indeed Padme Amidala kneeling beside the dying woman, her decoy. "Come! The danger has not passed!" But Padme waved the captain back furiously, then bent low to her fallen friend. "Corday," she said quietly, her voice breaking. Corday was one of her beloved bodyguards, a woman who had been with her and serving Naboo for many years. Padme gathered Corday up in her arms, hugging her gently. Corday opened her eyes, rich brown orbs so similar to Padme's own.
"I'm sorry, m'lady,"
she gasped, struggling for breath with every word.
"I'm not sure I..."
She paused and lay there, staring at Padme.
"I failed you." "No,"
Padme insisted, arguing the bodyguard's reasoning, arguing against all of this insanity.
"No, no, no."
Corday continued to stare at her, or stare past her, it seemed, to the grief-stricken young senator. Looking past her and past everything, Corday's eyes stared into a far different place. Padme felt her relax suddenly, as if her spirit simply leapt from her corporeal form.
"Corday!"
the senator cried, and she hugged her friend close, rocking back and forth, denying this awful reality. "M'lady, you are still in danger," Typho declared, trying to sound sympathetic, but with a clear sense of urgency in his voice. Padme lifted her head from the side of Corday's face and took a deep and steadying breath. Looking upon her dead friend, remembering all at once the many times they had spent together, she gently lowered Corday to the ground.
"I shouldn't have come back,"
she said as she stood up beside the wary Typho, tears streaking her cheeks. Captain Typho came up out of his ready stance long enough to lock stares with his senator. "This vote is very important," he reminded her, his tone uncompromising, the voice of a man sworn to duty above all else, so much like his uncle. "You did your duty, Senator, and Corday did hers. Now come." He started away, grabbing Padme's arm, but she shrugged off his grasp and stood there, staring down at her lost friend, Senator Amidala, please. Padme looked over at the man. Would you so diminish Corday's death as to stand here and risk your own life? Typho bluntly stated. What good will her sacrifice be if... Enough, Captain, Padme interrupted. Typho motioned for Dolphy to run a defensive perimeter behind them. Then he led the stricken Padme away. Back over at Padme's Naboo fighter, R2-D2 beeped and squealed and fell into line behind them. Chapter 5. The Senate building on Coruscant wasn't one of the tallest buildings in the city. Dome-shaped and relatively low, it did not soar up to the clouds, catching the afternoon sun as the others did in a brilliant display of shining amber. And yet the magnificent structure was not dwarfed by those towering skyscrapers about it, including the various Senate apartment complexes. Centrally located in the complex and with a design very different from the typical squared skyscraper, the bluish-smooth dome provided a welcome relief to the eye of the beholder. A piece of art within a community of simple efficiency. The interior of the building was no less vast and impressive. Its gigantic rotunda encircled, row upon row, by the floating platforms of the many senators of the Republic, representing the great majority of the galaxy's inhabitable worlds. A significant number of those platforms stood empty now, because of the separatist movement. Several thousand systems had joined in with Count Dooku over the last couple of years to secede from a republic that had, in their eyes, grown too ponderous to be effective. A claim that even the staunchest supporters of the republic could not completely dispute. Still, with this most important vote scheduled, the walls of the circular room echoed, hundreds and hundreds of voices chattering all at once, expressing emotions from anger to regret to determination. In the middle of the main floor, standing at the stationary dais, the one unmoving speaking platform in the entire building, Supreme Chancellor Palpatine watched and listened, taking in the tumult and wearing an expression that showed deep concern. He was past middle age now, with silver hair and a face creased by deep lines of experience. His term limit had ended several years ago, but a series of crises had allowed him to stay in office well beyond the legal limit. From a distance, one might have thought him frail, but up close, there could be no doubt of the strength and fortitude of this accomplished man.
"They are afraid, Supreme Chancellor," Palpatine's aide, Uv Gizzen, remarked to him. "Many have heard reports of the demonstrations. Even violent activity near this very building. The Separatists!"
Palpatine held up his hand to quiet the nervous aide. "They are a troublesome group," he replied. "It would seem that Count Dooku has whipped them into murderous frenzy. Or perhaps," he said with apparent reflection, "their frustrations are mounting despite the effort of that estimable former Jedi to calm them. Either way, the Separatists must be taken seriously." Uv Gizzen started to respond again, but Palpatine put a finger to pursed lips to silence him, then nodded to the main podium, where his major domo, Masamita, was calling for order.
"Order! We shall have order!"
the major domo cried, his bluish skin brightening with agitation. His lead-horn head tentacles protruding from the backside of his skull and wrapping down over his collar to frame his head like a cowl, twitched anxiously, their brownish-tipped horns bobbing on his chest. And as he turned side to side, his primary horns, standing straight for almost half a meter above his head, rotated like antennae gathering information on the crowd. Mas Amida was an imposing figure in the Senate, but the chatter, the thousand private conversations, continued.
"Senators, please!" Mas Amida called loudly. "Indeed, we have much to discuss. Many important issues. But the motion before us at this time, to commission an army to protect the Republic, takes precedence. That is what we will vote on at this time, and that alone. Other business must defer."
A few complaints came back at Mas Amida, and a few conversations seemed to gather momentum. But then Supreme Chancellor Palpatine stepped up to the podium, staring out over the gathering, and the great hall went silent. Mas Amida bowed in deference to the great man and stepped aside. Palpatine placed his hands on the rim of the podium, his shoulders noticeably sagging, his head bowed. The curious posture only heightened the tension, making the cavernous room seem even more silent, if that was possible.
"My esteemed colleagues,"
he began slowly and deliberately. But even with that effort, his voice wavered and seemed as if it would break apart. Curiosity sent murmurs rumbling throughout the nervous gathering once more. It wasn't often that Supreme Chancellor Palpatine appeared rattled.
"Excuse me,"
Palpatine said quietly. Then a moment later, he straightened and inhaled deeply, seeming to gather inner strength, which was amply reflected in his solid voice as he repeated,
"My esteemed colleagues, I have just received some tragic and disturbing news. Senator Amidala of the Naboo system has been assassinated."
A shock wave of silence rolled about the crowd. Eyes went wide, mouths for those who had mouths, hung open in disbelief.
"This grievous blow is especially personal to me," Palpatine explained. "Before I became Chancellor, I was a senator, serving Amidala when she was Queen of Naboo. She was a great leader who fought for justice. So beloved was she among her people that she could have been elected queen for life."
He gave a great sigh and a helpless chuckle, as if that notion had been received as purely preposterous by the idealistic Amidala, as indeed it had.
"But Senator Amidala believed in term limits, and she fervently believed in democracy. Her death is a great loss to us all. We will all mourn her as a relentless champion of freedom."
The Supreme Chancellor tilted his head, his eyes lowering, and he sighed again.
"And as a dear friend."
A few conversations began, but for the most part, the reverential silence held strong, with many senators nodding their heads in agreement with Palpatine's eulogy. But at that critical time, on this most important day, the grim news could not overwhelm. Palpatine watched, without surprise, as the volatile senator of Malastare, Ask-Ak, maneuvered his floating platform down from the ranks and into the center of the arena. His large head rotated slowly about, his three eyes, protruding on finger-like stalks, seeming to work independently, his horizontal ears twitching.
"How many more senators will die before this civil strife ends?"
the Malastarian cried.
"We must confront these rebels now, and we need an army to do it."
That bold statement, of course, brought many shouts of assent and dissent from the huge gathering, and several platforms moved all at once. One, bearing a blue-haired, scrunch-faced being, swept down fast beside the platform of Ask-Ak.
"Why weren't the Jedi able to stop this assassination?"
demanded Darsana, the ambassador of Glianselm.
"How obvious it is that we are no longer safe under the protection of the Jedi."
Another platform floated in fast on the heels of Darsana's.
"The Republic needs more security now,"
agreed Twi'lek Senator Ornfree Tah, his thick jowls and long blue Leku head tentacles shaking.
"Now, before it comes to war."
"Must I remind the senator from Malastare that negotiations are continuing with the separatists?"
Supreme Chancellor Palpatine interjected.
"Peace is our objective here, not war."
"You say this while your friend lies dead, assassinated by those same people with whom you wish to negotiate,"
Ask-Ak asked, his orange-skinned face a mask of incredulity. All around the central arena, shouts and cries erupted, with senators arguing vehemently. Many fists and other, more exotic appendages were waved in the air at that explosive point. Palpatine, supremely calm through it all, kept his disarming stare over Ask-Ak.
Did you not just name Amidala as your friend?
Ask-Ak screamed at him. Palpatine simply continued to stare at the man, a center of calm, the eye of the storm that was raging all about him. Palpatine's majordomo rushed to the podium then, taking the cue that his master must remain above this petulant squabbling if he was to be the voice of reason throughout this ferocious debate.
Order!
Masa Mita cried repeatedly.
Senators, please!
But it went on and on, the screaming, the shouting, the fist-waving. Unnoticed through it all, yet another platform, bearing four people, approached the Senate gallery from the side, moving slowly but deliberately. Aboard the approaching platform, Senator Padme Amidala was shaking her head with disgust at the shouting and lack of civility emanating from the huge gallery before them. This is exactly why Count Dooku was able to convince so many systems to secede. She commented to her handmaiden, Dorme, who was standing beside her, with Captain Typho and Jar Jar Binks in front of them, the captain driving the platform. There are many who believe that the Republic has become too large and disjointed, Dorme agreed. They came into the gallery, then moved slowly onto the main central area. But the senators there, and those in the lower rows of the gallery, were too involved with their shouting and arguing to even notice the unexpected appearance. Standing at the podium, though, Palpatine did see Amidala. His expression was one of blatant shock for just a moment, but then he shook himself out of it and a smile widened upon his face.
My noble colleagues,
Amidala said loudly, and the sound of her most familiar voice quieted many of the senators, who turned to regard her.
I concur with the Supreme Chancellor. At all costs, we do not want war.
Gradually at first, but then more quickly, the Senate Hall went quiet. And then came a thunderous outburst of cheering and applause.
It is with great surprise and joy that the chair recognizes the Senator from Naboo, Padme Amidala,
Palpatine declared. Amidala waited for the cheering and clapping to subside, then began slowly and deliberately.
Less than an hour ago, an assassination attempt was made upon my life. One of my bodyguards and six others were ruthlessly and senselessly murdered. I was the target, but more importantly, I believe this security measure before you was the target. I have led the opposition to building an army, but there is someone who will stop at nothing to assure its passage.
Cheers became boos from many areas of the gallery as those surprising words registered, and many others shook their heads in confusion. Had Amidala just accused someone in the Senate of trying to assassinate her? As she stood there, her gaze moving about the vast circular room, Amidala knew that her words, on the surface, could be seen as an insult to many. In truth, though, she wasn't thinking along those lines concerning the source of the assassination. She had a definite hunch, one that went against the obvious logic. The people who would most logically want her silenced were indeed those in favor of the formation of an army of the Republic. But for some reason she could not put her finger on, some subconscious clues, perhaps, or just a gut feeling, Amidala believed that the source of the attempt was exactly those who would not logically, on the surface at least, want her silenced. She remembered Panaka's warning about the Trade Federation reportedly joining hands with the separatists. She took a deep breath, steeling herself against the growing rancor in the audience, and steadfastly went on.
I warn you, if you vote to create this army, war will follow. I have experienced the misery of war firsthand. I do not wish to do so again.
The cheering began to outweigh the booing.
This is insanity, I say!
Ornfree Ta yelled above it all.
I move that we defer this vote immediately!
Suggestion only led to more yelling. Amidala looked at the Twi'lek Senator, understanding his sudden desire to defer a vote. that her mere presence had cast into doubt.
"Wake up, senators. You must wake up," she went on, shouting him down. "If we offer the separatists violence, they can only show us violence in return. Many will lose their lives, and all will lose their freedom. This decision could well destroy the very foundation of our great republic. I pray you do not let fear push you into a disastrous decision. Vote down this security measure, which is nothing less than a declaration of war. Does anyone here want that? I cannot believe they do."
Ask Ak, Ornfree Ta, and Darsana, on their floating platforms down by the podium, exchanged nervous glances as the cheers and boos echoed about the great hall. The fact that Amidala had just survived an assassination attempt and yet was here begging the Senate to put off raising an army against the likely perpetrators only added strength to her argument, only elevated Amidala higher in the eyes of many. And the former Queen of Naboo, having stood firm against the Trade Federation a decade before, was already held in high esteem by many. At Ask-Ak's nod, Ornfree Ta demanded the floor and was given it promptly by Palpatine.
"By precedence of order, my motion to defer the vote must be dealt with first,"
Ornfree Ta demanded.
"That is the rule of law."
Amidala glared at the Twi'lek, her expression both angry and frustrated by the obvious delaying tactic. She turned plaintively to Palpatine. But the Supreme Chancellor, though his responding expression seemed to be sympathetic to her plight, could only shrug. He moved to the podium and held up his hands for order, and when the room was quiet enough, announced,
"In view of the lateness of the hour and the seriousness of this motion, we will take up these matters tomorrow. Until then, the Senate stands adjourned."
Traffic clogged the Coruscant sky, flowing slowly about the meandering smoggy haze. The sun was up, giving the sprawling city an amber glow, but many lights were still on, shining behind the windows of the great skyscrapers. The massive towers of the Republic Executive Building loomed above it all, seeming as if they would reach the very heavens. And that seemed fitting indeed, for inside, even at this early hour, the events and participants took on godlike stature to the trillions of common folk of the Republic. Supreme Chancellor Palpatine sat behind his desk in his spacious and tasteful office, staring across at his four Jedi Master visitors. Across the room, a pair of red-clad guards flanked the door, imposing powerful figures with their great curving helmets and wide floor-length capes.
"I fear this vote," Palpatine remarked.
"It is unavoidable," replied Mace Windu.
A tall and muscular human, bald and with penetrating eyes, standing next to the even taller Ki-Adi Mundi.
"And it could unravel the remainder of the Republic," Palpatine said. "Never have I seen the senators so at odds over any issue."
"Few issues would carry the import of creating a Republic army,"
Jedi Master Plo Koon remarked. He was a tall, sturdy Keldor, his head ridged and ruffled at the sides, like the curly hair of a young girl, and with dark shadowed eyes and a black mask over the lower portion of his face.
"The senators are anxious and afraid, and believe that no vote will ever be more important than this one now before them."
"And this way or that, much mending must you do,"
said Master Yoda, the smallest in physical stature, but a Jedi Master who stood tall against anyone in the galaxy. Yoda's huge eyes blinked slowly, and his tremendous ears swiveled subtly, showing for those who knew him that he was deep in thought, giving the situation his utmost attention.
"Unseen is much that is here,"
he said, and he closed his eyes in contemplation.
"I don't know how much longer I can hold off the vote, my friends," Palpatine explained. "And I fear that delay on this definitive issue might well erode the Republic through attrition. More and more star systems are joining the Separatists."
Mace Windu, a pillar of strength even among the Jedi, nodded his understanding of the dilemma.
And yet, when the vote is done, if the losers do break away...
I will not let this republic that has stood for 1,000 years be split in two,
Palpatine declared, slamming a fist determinedly on his desk.
My negotiations will not fail.
Mace Windu held his calm, keeping his rich voice even and controlled.
But if they do, you must realize there aren't enough Jedi to protect the Republic. We are keepers of the peace, not soldiers.
Palpatine took a few steadying breaths, trying to digest it all.
Master Yoda, he said, and he waited for the greenish-skinned Jedi to regard him.
Do you really think it will come to war?
Again Yoda closed his eyes.
Worse than war, I fear, he said. Much worse.
What? An alarmed Palpatine asked.
Master Yoda, what do you sense? Mace Windu prompted.
Impossible to see, the future is,
the small Jedi Master replied, his great orb still looking inward.
The dark side clouds everything. But this I am sure of.
He popped open his eyes and stared hard at Palpatine.
Do their duty, the Jedi will.
A brief look of confusion came over the Supreme Chancellor. But before he could begin to respond to Yoda, a hologram appeared on his desk. The image of Dar Wak, one of his aides.
The Loyalist Committee has arrived, my lord, said Dar Wak in Huttese.
Send them in.
The hologram disappeared and Palpatine rose, along with the seated Jedi, to properly greet the distinguished visitors. They came in two groups. Senator Padme Amidala, walking with Captain Typho, Jar Jar Binks, her handmaiden Dorme, and Major Domo Mas Amida, followed by two other senators, Bail Organa of Alderaan and Horrocks Rider. Everyone moved to exchange pleasant greetings, and Yoda pointedly tapped Padme with his small cane.
With you, the Force is strong, young senator,
the Jedi Master told her.
Your tragedy on the landing platform. Terrible. To see you alive brings warm feelings to my heart.
Thank you, Master Yoda, she replied. Do you have any idea who was behind this attack?
Her question had everyone in the room turning to regard her and Yoda directly. Mace Windu cleared his throat and stepped forward.
Senator, we have nothing definitive, but our intelligence points to disgruntled spice miners on the moons of Naboo.
Padme looked to Captain Typho, who shook his head, having no answers. They had both witnessed the frustration of those spice miners back on Naboo, but those demonstrations seemed a long way from the tragedy that had occurred on the landing platform here on Coruscant. Releasing Typho from her gaze, she stared hard at Mace Windu, wondering if it would be wise to voice her hunch at this time. She knew the controversy she might stir, knew the blatant illogical ring to her claim, but still.
I do not wish to disagree, she said, but I think that Count Dooku was behind it.
A stir of surprise rippled about the room, and the four Jedi Masters exchanged looks that ranged from astonishment to disapproval.
You know, m'lady, Mace said in his resonant and calm voice. Count Dooku was once a Jedi. He wouldn't assassinate anyone. It's not in his character.
He is a political idealist, Ki-Adi Mundi, the fourth of the Jedi contingent, added. Not a murderer.
With his great domed head, the Saurian Jedi Master stood taller than anyone in the room, and the ridged flaps at the side of his pensive face added a measure of introspection to his imposing physical form. Master Yoda tapped his cane, drawing attention to himself, and that alone exerted a calming influence over the increasingly tense mood.
In dark times, nothing is what it appears to be,
the diminutive figure remarked.
But the fact remains, Senator. In grave danger you are.
Supreme Chancellor Palpatine gave a dramatic sigh and walked over to the window staring out at the Coruscant dawn.
"Master Jedi," he said, "may I suggest that the Senator be placed under the protection of your graces?"
"Do you think that a wise use of our limited resources at this stressful time?" Senator Bail Organa was quick to interject, stroking his well-trimmed black goatee.
"Thousands of systems have gone over fully to the Separatists, and many more may soon join them. The Jedi are our..."
"Chancellor,"
Padme interrupted,
"if I may comment, I do not believe the..."
"Situation is that serious," Palpatine finished for her.
"No, but I do, Senator."
"Chancellor, please," she pleaded. "I do not want any more guards."
Palpatine stared at her, as would an overprotective father, a look that Padme might have viewed as condescending from any other man.
"I realize all too well that additional security might be disruptive for you," he began.
And he paused, and then a look came over him, as if he had just struck upon a logical and acceptable compromise.
"But perhaps someone you are familiar with. An old friend."
Smiling cleverly, Palpatine looked to Mace Windu and Yoda.
"Master Kenobi?"
He finished with a nod, and his smile only widened when Mace Windu nodded back.
"That's possible," the Jedi confirmed. "He has just returned from a border dispute on Ancien."
"You must remember him, m'lady,"
Palpatine said, grinning as if it was a done deal.
"He watched over you during the blockade conflict."
"This is not necessary, Chancellor," Padme said determinedly.
But Palpatine didn't relinquish his grin in the least, showing clearly that he knew well how to defeat the independent senator's argument.
"Do it for me, m'lady. Please. I will rest easier. We had a big scare today. The thought of losing you is unbearable."
Several times Amidala started to respond, but how could she possibly say anything to deny the Supreme Chancellor's expressed concern? She gave a great defeated sigh, and the Jedi rose and turned to leave.
"I will have Obi-Wan report to you immediately, m'lady,"
Mace Windu informed her. As he passed, Yoda leaned in close to Padme and whispered so that only she could hear.
"Too little about yourself, you worry, Senator, and too much about politics. Be mindful of your danger, Padme. Accept our help."
They all left the room, and Padme Amidala stared at the door and the flanking guards for a long while. Behind her, at the back of his office, Chancellor Palpatine watched them all.
"It troubles me to hear Count Dooku's name mentioned in such a manner, Master,"
Mace said to Yoda as the Jedi made their way back to their council chamber.
"And from one as esteemed as Senator Amidala. Any mistrust of Jedi, or even former Jedi, in times such as these can be disastrous."
"Deny Dooku's involvement in the Separatist movement we cannot,"
Yoda reminded him.
"Nor can we deny that he began in that movement because of ideals," Mace argued. "He was once our friend. That we must not forget. And to hear him slandered and named as an assassin..."
"Not named,"
Yoda said.
"But darkness there is, about us all. And in that darkness, nothing is what it seems."
"But it makes little sense to me that Count Dooku would make an attempt on the life of Senator Amidala when she is the one most adamantly opposed to the creation of an army. Would not the Separatists wish Amidala well in her endeavors? Would they not believe that she is, however unintentionally, an ally to their cause? Or are we really to believe that they want war with the Republic?"
Yoda leaned heavily on his cane, seeming very weary, and his huge eyes slowly closed.
"More is here than we can know,"
he said very quietly.
"Clouded is the Force. Troubling it is."
Mace dismissed his forthcoming reflexive response, a further defense of his old friend Dooku. Count Dooku had been among the most accomplished of the Jedi Masters, respected among the Council, a student of the older and, some would say, more profound Jedi philosophies and styles, including an arcane lightsaber fighting style that was more front and back, thrust and riposte, than the typical circular movements currently employed by most of the Jedi. What a blow it had been to the Jedi Order and to Mace Windu when Dooku had walked away from them. And for many of the same reasons, the Separatists were now trying to walk away. The perception that the Republic had grown too ponderous and unresponsive to the needs of the individual, even of individual systems. It was no less troubling to Mace Windu concerning Dooku, as it was, no doubt, to Amidala and Palpatine concerning the Separatists, that some of the arguments against the Republic were not without merit. Chapter 6. As the lights of Coruscant dimmed, gradually replaced by the natural lights of the few twinkling stars that could get through the nearly continual glare, the great and towering city took on a vastly different appearance. Under the dark evening sky, the skyscrapers seemed to become gigantic natural monoliths, and all the supersized structures that so dominated the city, that so marked Coruscant as a monument to the ingenuity of the reasoning species, seemed somehow the mark of folly, a futile pride striving against the vastness and majesty beyond the grasp of any mortal. Even the wind at the higher levels of the structures sounded mournful, almost as a herald to what would eventually, inevitably become of the great city and the great civilization. As Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker stood in the turbo lift of the Senate Department Complex, the Jedi Master was indeed pondering such profound universal truths as the subtle change of day to night. Beside him, though, his young Padawan certainly was not. Anakin was about to see Padme again, the woman who had captured his heart and soul when he was but 9 years old and had never let it go. "You seem a little on edge, Anakin," Obi-Wan noted as the lift continued its climb. "Not at all," came the unconvincing reply. "I haven't seen you this nervous since we fell into that nest of Gundogs." "You fell into that nightmare, Master, and I rescued you, remember?" Obi-Wan's little distraction seemed to have the desired effect, and the pair shared a much-needed laugh. Coming out of it, though, Anakin remained obviously on edge. "You're sweating," Obi-Wan noted. "Take a deep breath. Relax. I haven't seen her in 10 years. "Anakin, relax," Obi-Wan reiterated. "She's not the queen anymore." The lift door slid open, and Obi-Wan started away, while Anakin, behind him, muttered under his breath, "That's not why I'm nervous." As the pair stepped into the corridor, a door across the way slid open, and a well-dressed Gungan, wearing fine red and black robes, stepped into the corridor opposite them. The three regarded each other for just a moment, and then the Gungan diplomat, losing all sense of reserve and propriety, began hopping around like a child.
"Obi! Obi! Obi!"
Jar Jar Binks cried, tongue and ears flapping.
"Misa so smiling to seeing you, sir! Woohoo!"
Obi-Wan smiled politely, though his glance at Anakin did show that he was a bit embarrassed, and he patted his hands gently in the air, trying to calm the excitable fellow.
"It's good to see you too, Jar Jar."
Jar Jar continued to hop around for just a moment, then suddenly, and with obvious great effort, calmed down.
"And this, Misa guessing, is a youth apprentice?"
he went on, and the Gungan seemed to have much more control of himself. For a moment, at least, until he took a good look at the young Padawan, and all pretense melted away.
"No!"
he shrieked, clapping his hands together.
"Annie? No! Little bitty Annie?"
Jar Jar grabbed the Padawan and pulled him forcefully to arm's length, studying him head to toe.
"No! You're so biggin'! Yay, 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 yay! Annie! Misa no believe him."
Now it was Anakin's turn to wear the embarrassed smile. Politely, he offered no resistance as the overexcited Gungan slammed him into a crushing hug, childish hop shaking him violently. "Hi, Jar Jar," Anakin managed to say. And Jar Jar just continued on, hopping and crying out his name and issuing a series of strange yai-yai sounds.
It seemed as if it would go on forever. But then Obi-Wan gently but firmly grabbed Jar Jar by the arm.
"We have come to speak with Senator Amidala. Could you show us to her?"
Jar Jar stopped bouncing and looked at Obi-Wan intently, his duck-billed face taking on a more serious expression.
"She's expecting you, sir." "Annie, Nisa no believin'."
His head bobbed a bit more, then he grabbed Anakin by the hand and pulled him along. The apartment inside was tastefully decorated, with cushiony chairs and a divan set in a circular pattern in the center, and a few well-placed artworks set about the walls. Dorme and Typho were in the room, standing beside the divan. The captain wearing his typical military garb, blue uniform under a brown leather tunic with black leather gloves and a stiff cap, its brim and band of black leather. Beside him stood Dorme in one of the elegant yet understated dresses typical of Padme's handmaidens. Anakin, though, didn't see either of them. He focused on the third person in the room, Padme, and on her alone. And if he had ever held any moments of doubt that she was as beautiful as he remembered her, they were washed away, then and there. His eyes roamed the senator's small and shapely frame in her black and deep purple robes, taking in every detail. He saw her thick brown hair drawn up high and far at the back of her head in a basket-like accessory, and wanted to lose himself in it. He saw her eyes and wanted to stare into them for eternity. He saw her lips and wanted to. Anakin closed his eyes for just a moment and inhaled deeply. And he could smell her again, the scent that had been burned into him as Padme's. It took every ounce of willpower he could muster to walk in slowly and respectfully behind Obi-Wan, and not merely rush in and crush Padme in a hug. And yet, paradoxically, it took every bit of his willpower to move his legs, which were suddenly seeming so very weak, and take that first step into the room, that first step toward her.
"Nisa here. Looky, looky!"
screeched Jar Jar, hardly the announcement Obi-Wan would have preferred, but one that he knew he had to expect from the emotionally volatile Gungan.
"Nisa Jedi arriving!"
"It's a pleasure to see you again, m'lady," Obi-Wan said, moving to stand before the beautiful young senator. Standing behind his master, Anakin continued to stare at the woman, to note her every move.
She did glance at him once, though very briefly, and he detected no recognition in her eyes. Padme took Obi-Wan's hand in her own.
"It has been far too long, Master Kenobi. I'm so glad our paths have crossed again. But I must warn you that I think your presence here is unnecessary."
"I'm sure that the members of the Jedi Council have their reasons," Obi-Wan replied. Padme wore a resigned, accepting expression at that answer. But a look of curiosity replaced it as she glanced again behind the Jedi Knight, to the young Padawan standing patiently. She took a step to the side so that she was directly in front of Anakin.
"Annie?"
she asked, her expression purely incredulous. Her smile and the flash in her eyes showed that she needed no answer. For just a flicker, Anakin felt her spirit leap.
"Annie," Padme said again. "Can it be? My goodness, how you've grown."
She looked down and then followed the line of his lean body, tilting her head back to emphasize his height, and he realized that he now towered over her. That did little to bolster Anakin's confidence, though. So lost was he in the beauty of Padme. Her smile widened, a clear sign that she was glad to see him, but he missed it. Or the implications of it, at least.
"So have you," he answered awkwardly, as if he had to force each word from his mouth.
"Grown more beautiful, I mean." He cleared his throat and stood taller.
"And much shorter," he teased, trying unsuccessfully to sound in control.
"For a senator, I mean." Anakin noted Obi-Wan's disapproving scowl, but Padme laughed any tension away and shook her head.
"Oh, Annie, you'll always be that little boy I knew on Tatooine," she said.
And if she had taken the lightsaber from his belt and sliced his legs out from under him, she would not have shortened Anakin Skywalker any more. He looked down, his embarrassment only heightened by the looks he knew that both Obi-Wan and Captain Typho were throwing his way. "Our presence will be invisible, milady," he heard Obi-Wan assure Padme. "I'm very grateful that you're here, Master Kenobi," Captain Typho put in. "The situation is more dangerous than the Senator will admit." "I don't need any more security," Padme said, addressing Typho initially, but turning to regard Obi-Wan as she continued. "I need answers. I want to know who is trying to kill me. I believe that there might lie an issue of the utmost importance to the Senate. There is something more here." She stopped as a frown crossed Obi-Wan Kenobi's face. "We're here to protect you, Senator, not to start an investigation," he said in calm and deliberate tones. But even as he finished, Anakin contradicted him. "We'll find out who's trying to kill you, Padme," the Padawan insisted. "I promise you." As soon as he finished, Anakin recognized his error, one that clearly showed on the scowl that Obi-Wan flashed his way. He had been fashioning a response to Padme in his thoughts, and had hardly even registered his master's explanation before he had blurted out the obviously errant words. Now he can only bite his lip and lower his gaze. "We are not going to exceed our mandate, my young Padawan learner," Obi-Wan said sharply. And Anakin was stung to be so dressed down publicly, especially in front of this particular audience. "I meant in the interest of protecting her, Master, of course." His justification sounded inane, even to Anakin. "We are not going through this exercise again, Anakin," Obi-Wan continued. "You will pay attention to my lead." Anakin could hardly believe that Obi-Wan was continuing to do this in front of Padme. "Why?" he asked, turning the question and the debate, trying desperately to regain some footing and credibility. "What?" Obi-Wan exclaimed, as taken aback as Anakin had ever seen him, and the young Padawan knew that he was pushing too far and too fast. "Why else do you think we were assigned to her if not to find the killer?" he asked, trying to bring a measure of calm back to the situation. "Protection is a job for local security, not for Jedi. It's overkill, Master. And so an investigation is implied in our mandate." "We will do as the Council has instructed," Obi-Wan countered. "And you will learn your place, young one. Perhaps with merely your presence about me, the mystery surrounding this threat will be revealed," offered Padme, ever the diplomat. She smiled alternately at Anakin and at Obi-Wan, an invitation for civility, and when both leaned back, shoulders visibly relaxing, she added, "Now, if you will excuse me, I will retire." They all bowed as Padme and Dorme exited the room, and then Obi-Wan stared hard at his young Padawan again, neither seeming overly pleased with the other. "Well, I know that I'm glad to have you here," Captain Typho offered, moving closer to the pair. "I don't know what's going on here, but the Senator can't have too much security right now. Your friends in the Jedi Council seem to think that minors have something to do with this, but I can't really agree with that." "What have you learned?" Anakin asked. Obi-Wan threw him a look of warning. "We'll be better prepared to protect the Senator if we have some idea of what we're up against," Anakin explained to his master. Logic he knew that Obi-Wan had to accept as reasonable. "Not much," Typho admitted. "Senator Amidala leads the opposition to the creation of a Republic Army. She's very determined to deal with the Separatists through negotiation and not force. But the attempts on her life, even though they've failed, have only strengthened the opposition to her viewpoint in the Senate. And since the Separatists would not logically wish to see a Republic Army formed," Obi-Wan reasoned, "we're left without a clue," Typho said. "In any such incident, the first questioning eyes turned toward Count Dooku and the Separatists." A frown crossed Obi-Wan's face, and Typho quickly added, "or to some of those loyal to his movement, at least." "But why they'd go after Senator Amidala is anyone's guess." "And we are not here to guess, but merely to protect," Obi-Wan said, in tones that showed he was finished with this particular line of discussion. Typho bowed, hearing him clearly. I'll have an officer on every floor, and I'll be at the command center downstairs. Typho left then, and Obi-Wan began a search of the room and adjoining chambers, trying to get a feel for the place. Anakin started to do likewise, but he stopped when he walked by Jar Jar Binks.
Misa bustin' with happiness seeing you again, Annie.
She didn't even recognize me, Anakin said, staring at the door through which Padme had departed. He shook his head despondently and turned to the Gungan. I've thought about her every day since we parted, and she's forgotten me completely.
Why are you saying that?
Jar Jar asked. You saw her, Anakin replied.
She's a happy,
the Gungan assured him.
Happier than Misa seeing her in a long old time. These are bad times, Annie. Bomb bad times.
Anakin shook his head and started to repeat his distress, but he noted Obi-Wan moving toward him and wisely held his tongue. Except that his observant master had already discerned the conversation.
You're focusing on the negative again, he said to Anakin. Be mindful of your thoughts. She was pleased to see us. Leave it at that. Now let's check the security here. We have much to do.
Anakin bowed. Yes, master. He could say the compliant words because he had to, but the young Padawan could not dismiss that which was in his heart and in his thoughts. Padme sat at her vanity, brushing her thick brown hair, staring into the mirror but not really seeing anything there. Her thoughts were replaying again and again the image of Anakin, the look he had given her. She heard his words again, grown more beautiful. And though Padme was undeniably that, those were not words she was used to hearing. Since she had been a young girl, Padme had been involved in politics, quickly rising to powerful and influential positions. Most of the men she had come into contact with had been more concerned with what she could bring to them in practical terms than with her beauty, or, for that matter, with any true personal feelings for her. As Queen of Naboo, and now a senator, Padme was well aware that she was attractive to men in ways deeper than physical attraction, in ways deeper than any emotional bond. Or perhaps not deeper than the latter, she told herself, for she could not deny the intensity in Anakin's eyes as he had looked at her. But what did it mean? She saw him again in her thoughts, and clearly. Her mental eye roamed over his lean and strong frame, over his face, tight with that intensity that she had always admired, and yet with eyes sparkling with joy, with mischief, with longing. That thought stopped the senator. Her hand slipped down to her sides, and she sat there, staring at herself, judging her own appearance as Anakin might. After a few long moments, Padme shook her head, telling herself that it was crazy. Anakin was a Jedi now. That was their dedication and their oath, and those things above all else were things Padme Amidala admired. How could he even look at her in such a manner? So it was all her imagination. Or was it her fantasy? Laughing at herself, Padme lifted her brush to her hair again, but she paused before she had even begun. She was wearing a silky white nightgown, and there were, after all, security cams in her room. Those cams had never really bothered her since she had always looked at them clinically. Security cams, with guards watching her every move, were a fact of her existence. And so she had learned to go about her daily routines, even the private ones, without a second thought to the intrusive eyes. But now she realized that a certain young Jedi might be on the other end of those lenses. Chapter 7. Clad in gray armor that was somewhat outdated, burned from countless blaster shots, but still undeniably effective, the bounty hunter stood easily on the ledge, 100 stories and more up from the Coruscant street. His helmet, too, was gray, except for a blue ridge crossing his eyes and running down from brow to chin. His perch seemed somewhat precarious, considering the wind at this height. But to one as agile and skilled as Django, and with a penchant for getting himself into and out of difficult places, this was nothing out of the ordinary. Right on time, a speeder pulled up near the ledge and hovered there. Django's associate, Zam Wessel, nodded to him and climbed out, stepping lithely onto the ledge in front of a couple of bright advertisement windows. She wore a red veil over the bottom half of her face. This was not a statement of modesty or fashion. Like everything else she wore, from her blaster to her armor to her other concealed and equally deadly weapons, Zam's veil was a practical implement, used to hide her Claudite features. Claudites were not a trusted species, for obvious reasons.
"You know that we failed," Django asked, getting right to the point.
"You told me to kill those in the Naboo starship," Zam said. "I hit the ship, but they used a decoy. Those who were aboard are all dead."
Django fixed her with a smirk and didn't bother to call her words a dodge.
"We'll have to try something more subtle this time. My client is getting impatient. There can be no more mistakes."
As he finished, he handed Zam a hollow transparent tube containing a pair of whitish centipede-like creatures as long as his forearm.
"Cahoons," he explained. "Very poisonous."
Zam Wessel lifted the tube to examine the marvelous little murderers more closely, her black eyes sparkling with excitement, and her cheekbones lifting as her mouth widened beneath the veil. She looked back at Django and nodded. Certain that she understood, Django nodded and started around the corner toward his waiting speeder. He paused before stepping in and looked back at his hired assassin.
"There can be no mistakes this time," he said.
The Claudite saluted, tapping the tube containing the deadly cahoons to her forehead.
"Tidy yourself up," Django instructed, and he headed away.
Zam Wessel turned back to her own waiting speeder and pulled off her veil. Even as she lifted the cloth, her features began to morph, her mouth tightening, her black eyes sinking back into shapely sockets, and the ridges on her forehead smoothing. In the time it took her to slide her veil into a pocket, she had already assumed a shapely and attractive female human form, with dark and sensuous features. Even her clothing seemed to fit her differently, flowing down gracefully from her face. Off to the side, Django nodded approvingly and sped away. As a Claudite, a changeling, Zam Wessel did bring some advantages to the trade, he had to admit. The vast Jedi Temple sat on a flat plain. Unlike so many of Coruscant's buildings, monuments of efficiency and spare design, this building itself was a work of art, with many ornate columns and soft rounded lines that drew in the eye and held it. Bas-reliefs and statues showed in many areas, with lights set at varying angles to distort the shadows into designs of mystery. Inside, the temple was no different. This was a place of contemplation, a place whose design invited the mind to wander and to explore, a place whose lines themselves asked for interpretation. Art was as much a part of what it was to be a Jedi Knight as was warrior training. Many of the Jedi, past and present, considered art to be a conscious link to the mysteries of the Force. And so the sculptures and portraits that lined every hall were more than mere replicas. They were artistic interpretations of the great Jedi they represented, saying in form alone what the depicted masters might speak in words. Mace Windu and Yoda walked slowly down one polished and decorated corridor, the lights low, but with a brightly illuminated room in the distance before them.
"Why couldn't we see this attack on the Senator?" Mace pondered, shaking his head. "This should have been no surprise to the wary, and easy for us to predict."
"Masking the future is this disturbance in the Force," Yoda replied.
The diminutive Jedi seemed tired. Mace understood well the source of that weariness.
"The prophecy is coming true," The dark side is growing.
And only those who have turned to the dark side can sense the possibilities of the future,
Yoda said.
Only by probing the dark side can we see.
Mace spent a moment digesting that remark, for what Yoda referred to was no small thing. Not at all. Journeys to the edges of the dark side were not to be taken lightly. Even more dire, the fact that Master Yoda believed that the disturbance all the Jedi had sensed in the Force was so entrenched in the dark side was truly foreboding.
It's been 10 years, and the Sith still have not shown themselves, Mace remarked, daring to say it aloud.
The Jedi didn't like to even mention the Sith, their direst of enemies. Many times in the past, the Jedi had dared hope that the Sith had been eradicated, their foul stench cleansed from the galaxy. And so they all would have liked to deny the existence of the mysterious Dark Force users. But they could not. There could be no doubt, and no denying, that the being who had slain Qui-Gon Jinn those 10 years before on Naboo was a Sith Lord.
Do you think the Sith are behind this present disturbance? Mace dared to ask.
Out there they are,
Yoda said with resignation.
A certainty, that is.
Yoda was referring to the prophecy, of course, that the dark side would rise, and that one would be born who would bring balance to the Force and to the galaxy. Such a potential chosen one was now known among them, and that too brought more than a little trepidation to these hallowed halls.
Do you think Obi-Wan's learner will be able to bring balance to the Force? Mace asked.
Yoda stopped walking and slowly turned to regard the other master, his expression showing a range of emotions that reminded Mace that they didn't know what bringing balance to the Force might truly mean.
Only if he chooses to follow his destiny,
Yoda replied. And as with Mace's question, the answer hung in the air between them, a spoken belief that could only lead to more uncertainty. Both Yoda and Mace Windu understood the places that some of the Jedi, at least, might have to travel to find the true answers. And those places, emotional stops and not physical, could well test all of them to the very limits of their abilities and sensibilities. They resumed their walk, the only sound the patter of their footsteps. In their ears, though, both Mace and Yoda heard the ominous echo of the diminutive Jedi Master's dire words.
Only by probing the dark side can we see.
Chapter 8. The door chime was not unexpected. Somehow Padme had known that Anakin would come to speak with her as soon as the opportunity presented itself. She started for the door, but paused, and moved instead to retrieve her robe, aware suddenly that her nightgown was somewhat revealing. Her movements again struck her as curious, though, for never before had Padme Amidala harbored any feelings of modesty. Still, she pulled the robe up tight as she opened the door, finding, predictably, Anakin Skywalker standing before her.
Hello, he said, and it seemed as if he could hardly draw his breath. Is everything all right?
Anakin stuttered over a response.
Oh, yes, he finally managed to say. Yes, my master has gone to the lower levels to check on Captain Typho's security measures, but all seems quiet.
You sound disappointed. Anakin gave an embarrassed laugh.
You don't enjoy this, Padme remarked.
There is nowhere else in all the galaxy I'd rather be, Anakin blurted. And it was Padme's turn to give an embarrassed little laugh.
But this inertia, she reasoned.
And Anakin nodded as he caught on. We should be more aggressive in our search for the assassin, he insisted. To sit back and wait is to invite disaster.
Master Kenobi does not agree.
Master Kenobi is bound by the letter of the orders, Anakin explained. He won't take a chance on doing anything that isn't explicitly asked of him by the Jedi Council. Padme tilted her head and considered this impetuous young man more carefully. Was not discipline a primary lesson of the Jedi Knights? Were they not bound, strictly so, within the structure of the Order and their code?
Master Kenobi is not like his own master, Anakin said. Master Qui-Gon understood the need for independent thinking and initiative. Otherwise, he would have left me on Tatooine.
And you are more like Master Qui-Gon? Padme asked.
I accept the duties I am given, but demand the leeway I need to see them to a proper conclusion.
Demand?
Anakin smiled and shrugged.
Well, I ask at least.
And presume when you can't get the answers you desire, Padme said with a knowing grin, though in her heart she was only half-teasing.
I do the best I can with every problem I am given, was the strongest admission Anakin would offer.
And so sitting around guarding me is not your idea of fun.
We could do better and more exciting things, Anakin said.
And there was a double edge to his voice, one that intrigued Padme and made her pull her robe up even tighter.
If we catch the assassin, we might find the root of these attempts, the Padawan explained, quickly putting the discussion back on a professional level.
Either way, you will be safer, and our duties will be made far easier.
Padme's mind whirled as she tried to sort out Anakin's thoughts and his motivations.
He was surprising her with every word, considering that he was a Jedi Padawan, and yet, given the fire that she clearly saw burning behind his blue eyes, he was not surprising her. She saw trouble brewing there, in those simmering and too passionate eyes. But even more than that, she saw excitement and the promise of thrills. And perhaps, the promise of finding out who it was that was trying to kill her.
Obi-Wan Kenobi stepped off the turbo lift tentatively, warily, glancing left and right. He noted the two posted guards, alert and ready, and he nodded his approval to them. Every corridor had been like this throughout the massive apartment complex. And in this particular area, above, below, and near Amidala's room, the place was locked down tight. Captain Typho had been given many soldiers at his disposal, and he had situated them well, overseeing as fine a defensive perimeter as Obi-Wan had ever witnessed. The Jedi Master took great comfort in that, of course, and knew that Typho was making his job easier. But Obi-Wan could not relax. He had heard about the attack on the Naboo cruiser in great detail from Typho, and considering the many precautions that had been taken to protect the vessel, everything from broadcasting false entry lanes to the appointed landing pad, to the many shielding fighters, the three accompanying the ship directly, and many more, both Naboo and Republic, covering every conceivable attack lane, these assassins could not be underestimated. They were good, and they were well connected to be sure. And likely, they were stubborn. To get at Senator Amidala through the halls of this building, though, would take an army. Obi-Wan nodded to the guards and walked a circuit of the slower floor, then satisfied, headed back to the turbo lift. Padme took a deep breath, her thoughts lost in the last images of Anakin as he had left her room. Images of her sister Sola flitted about her, almost as if she could hear Sola teasing her already. The senator shook all the thoughts of Sola and particularly of Anakin away and motioned to R2-D2, the little droid standing impassively against the wall beside the door. "Implement the shutdown," she instructed. R2-D2 replied with a fearful, "Go ahead, R2. It's all right. We have protection here." The droid gave another worried call, but extended a probe out to the security panel on the wall beside him. Padme looked back to the door, recalling again the last images of Anakin, her tall and lean Jedi protector. She could see his shining blue eyes as surely as if he was standing before her, full of intensity, watching over her more carefully than any security cam ever could.